So check this out. I got word that Hulu threw this crazy party in Beverly Hills with literally all of the biggest reality TV stars. I'm talking about all the Bravo-lebs. Candy Burris, Portia Williams, James Kennedy, Jax Taylor, even Captain Lee, and Kate Chastain. Here's the genius part. If you want to find out what happened at the party, you have to watch the commercials. Yes, I know I'll be tuning in and then signing up for a free trial to get my favorite reality TV shows at Hulu.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's always here to be your nerd shield. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob's Podcast Feedback Show. We've got a good one here today. Elaine Stott from Survivor Island of the Idols is going to join me to help answer so many of your questions about the riveting Survivor 2-hour premiere of Survivor Winners at War. I watched the episode again yesterday. So much fun. Really, really cool time to get to talk about all of this with you. Thanks again for listening. I know we're throwing a lot of content at you between everything that we did with the Know-It-Alls. I had a great conversation with Tina Weston. That was really, really fun to get to talk to Tina. In addition to that, we've got a lot of extra bonus content coming your way. Survivor Global was back this weekend, where the great Shannon Gates took some time off from podcasting about Survivor Australia to talk with the winner of Survivor New Zealand, Lisa Stanger. And then we also had a brand new thing that we're adding to the content factory this week, this season. Taryn Armstrong is doing a Survivor update in the style of the Big Brother live feed update. He had the first of those up with Mary Kwiatkowski. You can check that out in the Survivor podcast feed or at robinswebsite.com. Not to mention why blank lost for the premiere, and then also the RHAP B&B coming your way. Plus this week in Survivor and with Jessica Lease, and then also the return of the Wiggle Room on Monday. Make sure you have your wand offs in by Monday morning as we get back to that. So a jam-packed, no shortage of less than 10 hours of content coming your way about this single Survivor 40 premiere. But it's the premiere of season 40. What do you want us to do? Okay, this is what we're here for. Very excited about all that. We'd love it if you would subscribe to the podcast at robhaswebsite.com/iTunes. Leave us your feedback and star ratings. Help us hit the top of the charts here at the start of the podcast season. Also available on Spotify now, Rob's the Podcast, so check that out. Before we get talking with Elaine, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at ButcherBox. Very excited. We are going to have some steak for dinner tonight. Very excited about that. You know, it's not the summertime. Would love it on the barbecue. We're going to go with the cast iron grill to make up a steak here tonight. Going to throw some sweet potatoes in the air fryer. It's a great night's dinner. If you take your dinners seriously like we do, take a listen to what ButcherBox has for you, because every month ButcherBox is going to ship you a curated selection of high quality meat right to your home. All the meat is free of antibiotics and added hormones, and each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individual meals. It's packed fresh, ship frozen, and vacuum sealed, so it stays that way. You can customize your box or go with one of theirs. Either way, it's exactly what you want. It's the best meat that you can get shipped to your door, which means one less trip to the grocery store. They've got options like 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage pork, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, which is a favorite of mine, and bacon that's free of nitrates and added sugar. It's the way that meat should be. ButcherBox is the most affordable and convenient way to get healthy, humanely raised meat. With ButcherBox, you get the highest quality meat for around $6 a meal, which is incredible. They even have free shipping nationwide, except to Alaska and Hawaii. You're going to feel like you won a reward challenge every single month when you get this box of meat shipped to your door. You can get 2 filet mignons, a pack of bacon, plus $20 off your first box when you sign up now at butcherbox.com/RHAP and use promo code RHAP at checkout. That's 2 free filet mignons, a pack of bacon, plus $20 off your first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/RHAP or use promo code RHAP at checkout. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to bring in our guest today to talk about this 2-hour premiere of Survivor Winners at War. She was out there. She was there with two of these participants on the Island of the Idols. Please welcome the great Elaine Stott is here. Elaine, how are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you having me on. Getting a redneck perspective is going to be fun.
Good. Very excited to catch up with you and talk a little bit about your thoughts here for season 40. Elena, what have you been up to since the end of season 39?
I have been doing appearances, and I've been talking to the youngins, going to a few schools, and actually just living the best life, bro. Like,
yeah.
I'm a stay-at-home mom now. My woman let me stay home after Survivor, so I just been taking care of the farm and put the kids on the bus and doing that. So, but I've been having a great time, man.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the premiere party you went to the other night?
It was off the chain. We had it at the KS Bar in Lexington, and I don't know, the place was packed out. There wasn't a seat in the house. It was like standing room only. And I went to go to the bathroom, and I was gone for like 45 minutes because I couldn't get back to my table. It was just so much fun. I mean, the atmosphere was nuts. And Davey came. Let's see, Winston and Avi from Big Brother, they came.
Yeah. And we should say that. So you were at Nick's premiere party. And
yeah.
Of course, Kentucky Survivor fans, very lucky to have so much Survivor going on these last couple of years.
Well, I think that CBS and Survivor are starting to realize that Kentucky's a gold mine for good TV. Yeah. So I it's been super cool. Like me, Donathan, Nick, there's a few others. Let's see, Kentucky Joe.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Austin, is it? Austin's from Kentucky.
Okay.
I mean, there's a bunch of us. And then like Winston Hines, he was on Big Brother. Like I said, Kentucky's TV gold, man. Everybody should like start recruiting from Kentucky.
Now, did you know Nick at all before he went to go back for this season? Or you didn't meet him until after he had already played in the season?
Well, me and him's from the same hometown, but he's quite a few years younger than I am.
Yeah.
So I didn't know him personally, but my god sister was really good friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had never talked to him until I went on the show and came home.
Yeah.
And when I came home, I messaged him and I was like, yo, I got a secret. I was on Survivor 2. And me and him just started talking, and then come to find out, like, his grandpa knew my grandpa, like, you know, because we're from a small place, so everybody knows everybody, and we actually have a lot of people in common, you know, so.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't know him beforehand, and we're pretty good friends now, so that's super cool.
Yeah, that's cool that you got to go to, where he got to go to all your stuff last season, you get to go to his stuff this season, it's a fun thing.
Yeah, I mean, I get to relive my glory days, you know, I feel like I should be wearing my high school Letterman or something. Yeah, but it's cool though. I mean, it brings back memories, and it makes me think about, you know, just however many months ago, like me and him, it was me in that spot. So it's cool. I'm glad I could be supporting him though.
Okay. How did you think Nick did on the first night of Survivor Winners at War?
I thought he done pretty good. I was actually giving him a hard time because he reminded me of like a little kid. You know, like there's the first shots when they get their buffs and he's like waving his buff like a little kid. It was hilarious. I thought he'd done great, man. A key to his game is going to be just trying to lay low and letting the big dogs fight it out.
Yeah, he was able to, you know, stay off the radar in the early going, which was good for him. I was very worried that people were going to maybe look at him as like, okay, he's the new guy. We don't really know him, but it didn't really seem like that his name was being thrown around really by anybody. You heard maybe Tyson mentioned it, and then Amber threw a vote his way, but seemed like that he's looks like he's pretty good here in the early going.
I'm glad he dodged the bullet, so to speak, and kind of fell into the background.
Yeah. Okay. Elaine, we need to talk about your mentors, Rob and Sandra, that it looked like we thought coming into this season, here we go. They're going to be working together. They just came off of Island of the Idols. They're going to be on the same page. And somehow they ended up as like bitter enemies, or more so for on Sandra's part, coming into this season over that Rob didn't tell Sandra that he was going to play. And I guess that she had said that she was going to play. Were you surprised to see that the two idols from your season now not on the same page coming into season 40?
Well, I mean, you can look at that one of two ways. Is one, you believe what Sandra's saying, and two, you don't. And because it's Sandra and she is the queen, part of me wants to believe that they kind of hatched this thing where they have animosity between each other just to throw the people off their scent on how tight they really are. Mm-hmm. That could be a possibility. I mean, I don't know if it's true, and I guess we'll have to wait for the season to continue to see whether or not that is. But just because Sandra's got tricks up her sleeve, bro, I wouldn't put nothing past her for her and Rob to come up with something to throw everybody off their scent. But if it is true, like, that's kind of dirty on Rob's part, because there they were on the Island of the Idols all them days, and I'm not saying a word. So if I was Sandra, I'd be gunning for him, too, if it's true.
Yeah, I really do think it's true that I definitely understand what you're saying about, like, well, maybe they hatched this, but they're telling it to, you know, the producers, to the reporters, to a bunch of people that have nothing to do with the game. And I kind of feel like that if it was fake, that they would tell us at home, like, hey, oh, we have this plan. I mean, Sandra was, you know, gunning for Amber in that first episode. I have to feel like that this is real. And, you know, it's a major, major storyline in the season.
Well, like I said, that's why I said, like, it towards the end of the season, if, you know, she doesn't give one of those confessionals where she's like, aha, tricks on you, then, yeah, I could see why she would be totally pissed off by that. Because, I mean, they've been playing together for years, you know, not so much on the seasons, but they've known each other for years and have had a relationship. So I would be gunning after Rob's old lady, too. I mean, that's the thing, though. And then, you know, Rob's going to be like, well, who got rid of Amber? And that's going to be on from then. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Elaine, I have a lot of questions for you from the listeners of the podcast. Let me play you a voicemail question that we got from Sarah. Sarah, formerly from Connecticut.
Hi, this is Sarah, previously from Connecticut. I'm thinking Rob did Sandra a huge favor by supposedly not saying that he was going to go play season 40. We see how pregame alliances are treated. Ask the poker players. We see how tight pairs are treated. Ask Natalie. We see how a husband and wife are treated. Ask Amber. Imagine how it would be for Sandra if her work husband and her had a really tight pregame alliance after being together for 36 days just a week ago. Like, I don't think that would go well for Sandra. I think that she should be thanking Rob, not mad at him.
Yeah, Elaine, what do you think of that? Because I do think that it's interesting that I don't think that this is like a staged, like a choreographed thing, but that could this end up working for Rob and Sandra, where that people say, like, okay, well, Rob is going for Sandra, leave him in the game. Sandra's going for Rob, leave her in the game.
Yeah, no, that's what I was exactly what I was saying. But, you know, if you take whether it's real or fake out of it and just say, you know, it is real, and Rob really didn't tell Sandra, I think it helps both of them. Because, you know, anybody that looks at Survivor, the people that stand out more than anybody else is Rob and Sandra. And because they have played together for so long, you would automatically think that there's some kind of work in something somewhere. You know what I mean? So I think it can benefit both of them. And like you said, though, if they're gunning at each other, then, you know, it would be best in people's best interest to keep them around.
Yeah. Elaine, we didn't get to hear too much about this. So, you know, we saw a little bit on the screen, but what was your experience like with Rob and Sandra when you went to the Island of the Idols? You have any funny stories about, like, when you spent the day with them that time?
It was so much fun because, you know, being a big fan and you watch the show, like, there are just certain people that are icons, and they are. Rob, not for nothing, but you're another one that's like huge in the Survivor community. poverty. Like, there's just certain names that just, like, you know, it gets you butterflies going because you're a rookie. And when I walked up on the beach, I was like, holy, shut your face. Like, this can't be real, you know? And when we went up and we sat in camp, I was just giddy, bro. I was just ready to go. I was in a situation. I felt like, let's go, game on, I'm doing whatever. And like, they thought it was so funny because I was so gung ho. And then the hat threw Rob off. So he's like, you know, what's up with the hat? You're from Kentucky. Like, what's going on? So I was cracking jokes and I had him laughing and stuff, which I thought was super cool. Cause here's my idols, you know, laughing with my humor. So, I mean, it was amazing. Like, I can never like express like how much that meant to me, just being able to go out there and do that.
Yeah. Cause you have the Red Sox hat, you have the camo Red Sox hat. Are you a real Red Sox fan?
Yeah, I am. When I was in college, I had some friends that I was on the judo team with, and they were
judo
from Boston.
Team.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I went to casting, I was actually putting people in arm bars and chokeholds and shit as part of my casting. And and that's part of the wrestling thing on there. You know, me and Missy would wrestle, and you know, people don't know it, but I'm a little badass. You know what I mean? So yes, I'm a busted can of piss. I whoop some ass too. You know, so. So whenever I was in college, my friends were from Boston and they were on the judo team with me, and they kind of got me watching Red Sox baseball, and I kind of just fell in love with the team because I always root for underdogs. I'm a Bengals fan, if that tells you anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like, I just root for people that just can never get the win or come just short or things like that. And at the time, the Red Sox hadn't won their World Series yet. It was still the curse of the Bambino, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just fell in love, and I've loved Boston ever since. I don't watch as much baseball now as I used to, but now I'm addicted to the Red Sox hat. So I can't get rid of them. Every time I get rid of one, I get another. So
yeah, and that won Rob over when he saw the hat.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, the camo's not his thing, but hell, it's mine. So I was like, oh yeah, camo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sandra wears the camo hat. So your hat was like the
mixture
baby
of
Robin Sandra's hats.
Yeah, that's right. The baby of the two. You're right. And we were all three a busted can of biscuits. So there you go. We got all that in common right there.
Yeah.
It was fun though, man. It was so much fun.
I want to get back to Robin Sandra in a minute, but are there other players besides Nick as well that you would really have wanted to work with if you were one of the people that was on this season?
I really like Ben.
Yeah.
I kind of go for like, you know, people that seem like good people. They like to cut up, goofy, you know what I mean? And Ben showed all that in this first episode when he told Rob that stuff and then was like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Dude, I cracked up. It was hilarious. So I would love to have gotten to play with Ben and align with Ben. And,
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about Ben? Because I've really been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days since we got to see the episode. And I think that Ben actually did a really good job in this episode. I think that, you know, the thing that got a lot of attention was the whole thing with Boston Rob. And I have that clip from the episode.
Then you're on the receiving end of Boston Rob's like magic. And you're like,
so funny. It was such a funny part of the episode. But I actually thought that Ben was really good in the episode. And I thought that he, to me, I think was like kind of the glue between, you know, these different groups.
Old school, new school. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that he had this relationship with Adam. He brought the information to Adam about mm-hmm. that Adam's name was being thrown out there. Adam then started to really push for Jeremy and Natalie to be broken up. It seemed like that Ben was tight with Jeremy, and then Jeremy was like leaning on Ben. People, you know, made a lot of jokes about that Ben with his whole thing with Boston Rob. But I think when Boston Rob confronts you point blank, I think that the best thing to do, you can't lie to Boston Rob in that spot.
Yeah, just spill the beans. There's no point in trying to lie, because if he finds it out, you're done. No, I agree with you. I think Ben done great this episode. You don't want to be the one pushing votes, but you don't want to be the one out of votes. And I think Ben rode right in the middle, like you said, between the two. And when he took that info to Adam, because he had a gut feeling of, you know, keeping Adam around because he could help him with knowing the game and this, that, and the other, I thought that was super smart.
Yeah.
And it played right into what he needed to do. And I don't, even though he voted against Natalie, like, I don't think he's so much hurt with Jeremy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that the relationship is so far gone because he made that vote that Jeremy's going to put him on the outs. It's just maybe it's a semi red flag for Jeremy, but I still think Ben will have the opportunity to get back in with him. So I think he's in a great position.
Yeah, because after that vote happened, we ended up seeing that there was some talk between Jeremy and Michelle and Ben and Adam about, like, oh, Rob and Parvati are playing everybody. We need to come back against this old school alliance. So, yeah, they voted out one of, you know, the new school people that was tight with Jeremy. But it seems like that there's going to be a movement now to come back and, you know, strike back against Rob and Parvati.
I think he's in a great spot. And like I said, if I was out there, Ben is one guy I'd probably try to link up with for sure.
Yeah, I just think he's in a really good spot. I know everybody's worried about, like, oh, he's going to go out and he's going to find the idols. But especially if that becomes a thing on this season where the players realize that, oh, the idols aren't so much, you know, out here on the island. If it works out that the idols are out there on the edge of extinction and you have to get sent. Now, what reason do people have to get rid of Ben because that he can't even go out and, you know, track down all these idols?
See, that also makes Tony, like, it lowers his threat level. Because that's Tony's thing, is running around camp, like, finding idols, doing this, that, and the other, which he didn't do on the first episode. But you know that side of Tony will eventually come out. Like you said, if the idols are coming from edge of extinction, there'll be no need for him to do that. So it's actually going to help him, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see. Man, I'm so excited to see the rest of the season, just to see how all this stuff plays out and who figures out. I think whoever figures out the edge of extinction, how to work it to their advantage, is the person that's going to run it to the end.
Elaine, what do you make of Edge of Extinction? I know it's very, I don't even want to say polarizing, that some people hate it, some people don't mind it as much. Do you have a feeling about it?
Well, my personal opinion is if you're a player, you love it.
Yeah.
Because that it's a second chance. And, you know, let's talk about my season for a second. If Ronnie Barta had a chance to go to Edge of Extinction, he would have ate that up in a New York minute because he didn't have that. And he just went home. I mean, that boy didn't even get rice because we couldn't make fire the first 3 days. So if you don't think he wouldn't jump at a chance for something like that, you're crazy. And that's the thing. When you're a player, you understand that. But as a viewer, you feel like it takes away from the major part of the game. And I can understand it. I can feel that, especially like with the Chris Underwood win. You know, where he only technically played like 13 days, I can see how viewers would be upset with stuff like that. But my honest opinion is that anybody during this 39, 40 seasons now, anybody that gets the win, whether you believe they were a great player or not, they deserve it because they took those particular people, they done what they had to do, and jury comes into that. And Chris worked the jury when he was on education.
Yeah.
So how can you fault him doing that? That was the cards he was dealt, and he played them well. So I don't hate anybody for coming out with the W. I think every winner that ever won deserves it.
Now, when you guys were playing, how long did it take for you to be convinced that there wasn't an Edge of Extinction, or was production up front with you guys that there is no Edge of Extinction this season?
I just didn't think they would do it so close together. You know, They don't run one twist and then take it right into the neck. They typically don't do that because they like to mix it up. They don't want you to like get settled and get your footing. And if you knew there was an edge of extinction going in there, you mentally prepare for it. So I just didn't think that they was going to do that so close to the last one. And, but I had big Tom telling me there's no idols on the island of the idols. And so, dude, I was so confused. I didn't know what the hell was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Robin Amber a little bit. This is a question that we got from NBA discussion on Twitter. Is Amber getting voted out the best thing for Rob? He's less of a target and Amber can get him the advantages. Could you see this being a positive for Rob now that Amber is voted out?
Yeah, I can. The only thing that I think might hurt Rob is because of his vengeance. Mm-hmm. You know, like, who votes him? Or, like, who done it? Who, you know what I mean? Like, if he goes on, like, a headhunt, like, trying to avenge his woman, it might put him in a situation that he might not necessarily be in if that hadn't happened. You see what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. it's like, he's got to get him back for his girl now. And I would just hate for that to... He'll make poor decisions, which I don't know if he would, but he'll make poor decisions and vote people out that, and then shoot himself in the foot, so to speak.
Yeah. So, yeah. I do think it will help him, because I think that, you know, having, if his focus is on, you know, getting payback for who voted out Amber, then I feel like I'm less threatened by keeping him around in my group, because I know that ultimately he's like looking to take out the other side. And, you know, unless I have like, you know, some great relationship with somebody, you know, from pre-existing relationships on the other side, like, I think I feel a little more comfortable keeping Rob around.
Yeah. I know that you're completely right. If he's focused on the individuals that actually voted for her, then if you're not one of those individuals, you know what I mean? Then keeping him around is not such a bad idea. So yeah. It's going to be interesting. All of it's going to be interesting to find out how it goes.
Now, on the other side of things, this is a question from Jesse Bruce Clay. Wouldn't Boston Rob's best move to be immediately get sent to the edge of extinction? He'd be reunited with Amber. They'd hang out as a loving couple with the future jurors. He's a big favorite to win that challenge, to get back in and squeeze into the final three. Like, that's the move, isn't it? And I will add, not to mention that they'd have the ability to pool their fire tokens. So Rob and Amber can now be two people working together, give Rob all the fire tokens, and that he could have the best shot to win the advantage to get back in the game.
I mean, that is, you don't want to go from having two legs to having one. And I think if you get sent to edge of extinction, you're basically cutting a leg off. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, you're still standing, but you're wobbling. And I don't think you would want to do that. You would want to try to stay in the game as long as possible. My personal opinion. So I don't know if I agree.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, Elaine, that is the move like, you know, this could be like a completely different way of looking at the game, but is the ultimate power in the game going to end up being the fire tokens, where you could play a great game on the main island for a really long time, but then if you end up being the person who's on the edge of extinction for a long time, collecting up all these fire tokens, have the best shot to ultimately get back into the game, sweet talk the jury while you're there. I feel like that somebody could have a really good shot to be able to build up a, you know, this other alternative resume on the edge of extinction and then come back in and steal the game again.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Like, how long are they, do we know how long the edge is going to be there? Like, when are they going to bring them back? Does anybody know?
So we don't know. I think that we can assume that it's going to be similar to what they do, what they did in the Edge of Extinction when Chris came in.
Closer to the end.
Yeah, and I say that because that I asked Jeff about this, that I went to the premiere party they had the other night, and I got the chance to interview Jeff, and I brought up the Edge of Extinction and maybe some ways that they could tweak it. And I said, well, what if the person doesn't come back like right so close to the end? Maybe you'll bring them back at the merge. Nobody will care. And Jeff said, well, what they want to do is they feel like that the twist for the season needs to pay off in the final episode. That's the way they look at it, like because it's a story. I don't think anybody really looks at the show like that. But that's what they feel like as storytellers, they need to bring the person back in the last episode.
Man, I don't know. As a viewer, I don't much care for Edge, but as a player, I would love it. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I don't know how it's going to play out. It all depends on how deep they allow the Edge person to go in that final competition. And then it depends who's left in the game. Like, if you're in a good alliance and you go to Edge, and when you come back, if you still have some strong bonds, you may not be targeted. Cause you get one or two. Is it one tribal before the final when they came back when Chris Underwood,
yeah.
How did that work?
So I think it was two, but I think he had an idol also.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he came back. They gave him an idol also when he came back.
Oh, so that saves you for the first one. Yeah, see, man, that would be a bummer. if he was on the season, like Chris Underwood season, and like Gavin and them like just get beat out. Yeah. Dude, I don't know if I can handle that. That would be some rough stuff. But you know, it's a game, and you never know what they're going to throw at you. So you have to be willing to accept those kind of like crazy whatever. You have to be willing to accept it, and you got to accept the good with the bad. Okay. And if you're willing to be like, oh, I'm going to get this chance just in case I get voted out, this is great. Then you need to be willing to be like, yo, I can lose this if so and so comes. You know what I mean? You got to be willing to the give and take of it. You got to be willing to go with it.
Okay. Let me play you a question. This is from another one of our listeners. Graham from the Bay has a voicemail question for you about the people on the edge of extinction.
What's up, Rob? It's Graham from the Bay. First of all, had a blast at Busby's. That was my first RHAP live event. Got to meet so many great people and Survivor players, and congrats on your 10 years again. But what I want to bring up is that the first two votes were based around breaking up two pairs that existed before the game started. And now, coincidentally, the two men from that tribe, or from those couples, and Jeremy and Rob, are now on the same tribe, and both have two fire tokens each, and both of their allies are on the edge of extinction together. I know people really don't want to talk about this shit, but doesn't EOE and fire tokens make it a little more interesting? Just saying. Later, brah.
Okay. I do think that Graham brings up some good points here now, where Rob and Jeremy, who were allegedly part of the Poker Alliance, but I think that your best, you know, evidence that the Poker Alliance doesn't really mean anything is that Rob voted against Jeremy's number one ally there at that first tribal council. But now here are Rob and Jeremy, both of their, you know, partners in the game are at the edge of extinction. They both have two fire tokens. Do you think that the people voted out could potentially bond Jeremy and Rob together a little bit more?
Yeah, it's possible. The fire tokens is like, puts a whole nother spin on edge. I think it makes it better. It makes Definitely. It more interesting. It gives you something from Edge to look forward to other than just that one comp. You know what I mean? Because every time somebody's voted out, you're wondering who they're giving what to, what they're going to do with this, that, and the other. And it just makes it so much more interesting. So they're actually a part of the game, actually affecting it other than just, you know, talking up the jury. You know what I mean? So I think that it could. It just depends on, like, how personal, like, Jeremy takes Rob getting out his girl. You know, how personal. And these are all like returners. So I don't know if they'll be, other than Rob's old lady getting voted out, like, I don't know if any of the rest of them will be like, you know, I got to murder whoever because they done this, this, and this. It just puts them on red alert. Jeremy's like, all right, now game on. You know what I'm saying? So it could bond them together. It'll be interesting to see if that's how it works out. I don't know if that's how it's going to work out.
Speaking of the fire tokens, Elaine, that what do you think of all of the players having to bequeath their fire tokens to each other after they get voted out?
Dude, whoever invented that word? Like, come on. No,
you wouldn't
I think
say that, Elaine? You wouldn't bequeath anything to anybody?
No, don't get me started.
No, we're started.
Like, that word is just so funny. When Davey heard it at the viewing party, like, he almost lost it, and it was the funniest shit ever. So I think that adds like a whole nother dynamic to it, because you got fire tokens and you're voted out. You could give it to a weak player and try to keep the weekend. Or you could give them to strong people to keep the strong in so they don't come to edge, so it betters your chances. Like, you can come at it so many. The thing is, though, is like, I don't think that, you know, after the first couple of days, I'm not sure that they exactly have like a foothold on how things are really working. I think Sandra's starting to kind of figure it out, you know, but yeah, that's what I said. I think the first person that figures out how to use those fire tokens and Edge of Extinction to their advantage, I think those are the ones that's going to last. Yeah. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting thing to watch play out. Let's talk some more about the fire tokens. This is Sean from Boston.
Hey, Rob and Elaine. This is Sean from Boston, and I want to talk a little bit about fire tokens. So for years, people have been upset that idol hunts are no more than glorified Easter egg hunts, which obviously doesn't always help someone playing a strong social or strategic game. Now, idols are linked to literal social currency, and people are still upset. I don't get it. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
So, Elaine, I know last season you ended up, you got the idol later on in the game when everybody was at the reward challenge. You ended up finding the idol. But I have to think that the way that the fire tokens are playing out, at least in the first episode, I feel like that the fire tokens would probably increase the chances that you would end up with an idol, because I think it would play into the social game more, because people have to like you to want to send you the chance to potentially get the idol. Do you like the way that the fire tokens are working, and do you think that they make the game more fair in terms of who gets the idols?
I mean, you're asking somebody that was super light and super social, so I think it's a great idea. Where was that on my season? I could have used somebody, I'm not going to say the word, giving me, I'm not going to say the B word, giving me fire token. I would have loved for that. You know, maybe I could have got a few of those and win the damn thing. But
yeah,
I think, I really do. I think it kind of is. It's like, it's a popularity game. And man, I'm just so, I want to watch every episode like right now. I just want to binge watch and just get it over with, just so I can find out what's going down, because I'm so curious as to how it's going to work.
Yeah, I am too. I'm just really so excited to, you know, talk about everything that's going on right now. It's a very fun time. With all due respect to everybody from your season, this is a very, very fun time right now, Elaine.
I take no offense to that. I totally understand. It's my season was a little dark, and I just, it is what it is. You take the good with the bad, and it was lessons to be learned from my season.
Yeah, but I do feel for you and so many of your cast members who, really fun personalities and a lot of great players. And, it stinks that, we weren't able to, have as much fun with you guys as we would have liked to have had under better circumstances.
Yeah, the overshadowed the part of it was, but it is, that's what I said though, bro. It is what it is. Like you have no idea like what's God's plan, and it just wasn't God's plan for it to be one of those seasons. It was just meant to be something else, and that's why I can't wait to go back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
to get a chance at being on a season where it is more about fun. Like I would have loved to have been a part of like this one if I could have won and got on the damn thing. But yeah, this one is going to be so much more fun than mine, and I can't wait.
Okay, let me ask you another question about the fire tokens. This is a question from Haley.
Hey, Rob. This is Haley from Charlotte, North Carolina, longtime listener, first-time caller, and new patron. I have a question about the fire tokens. So we saw the menu that the island, all the people on the actual, in the main game, how they can spend the fire tokens. And everything seemed to be like three or more fire tokens each, it sounded like. So Sandra spent her fire token on the idol that Natalie gave her. So whenever the everyone on her tribe needs to pull together to get something, do you think it's going to be a problem when she has to explain that she doesn't have a fire token anymore? I haven't heard anyone talk about that yet. Because obviously it sounded like a great deal. She only has to pay one fire token for an idol, which is awesome. But could that actually cause more problems in the long run when you have to explain what you did with your fire token? Can't wait to hear your thoughts. And congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you. So I think Haley has a good question here about, if there comes up a point where it's like, okay, let's all pool our fire tokens together, because there were some like tribe things that you can buy on that menu. And then somebody asks Sandra, okay, well, Sandra, we need your fire token. if they find out that she already spent her fire token, is that the kind of thing where I maybe that's the similar might thing might be like when somebody went to the Island of the Idols and then I don't have a vote at this tribal council. And I told everybody that, I didn't have a chance to play a game or there was nothing going on there.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think that these caliber of players are going to be like, I really don't think they'll waste their fire tokens like on rice or wine or whatever it was, those other crazy things. I don't think they're going to be the kind to do that. I do think that when somebody falls into the minority, that they may try to pull their little three or four members to, get an advantage or whatever the case may be to help them, get the numbers or whatever. And if Sandra was put in that situation where they asked her to put in, I think Sandra is a savvy enough player that she wouldn't, I don't think she would outright be like, yo, I don't have it. I don't think she would do that. I think she would spin it and come up with a solution where she wouldn't have to share that information. Like, I think she's smart enough to come up with, don't you worry about what mine is. You know what I mean? Don't you something to figure out a new plan or a new whatever, a new strategy, so she didn't have to divulge that information. And I just think that's a testament to Sandra and the kind of areas. She's smart, bro. Super smart. So I don't think she's going to get caught slipping, so to speak.
Yeah. And a lot of people had wondered, well, why did Natalie give her idol to Sandra? And Natalie had tweeted out this. So, the people were asking her, why did she do it? She said she needed somebody that she knew was going to take the deal. There might have been other players that she could have thrown it out to. She knew Sandra is definitely in need of an idol and she needs that fire token back from Sandra.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about people in the game, the most likely to not find or not get. I mean, Sandra, what she found one, right? In all the times that she's played.
Yes. In Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah. In Heroes versus Villains, she found one. So she's the least likely to be searching, but she's also one of the ones that's most likely to like keep shit on the down low and buy one for herself and not tell nobody else. Mm-hmm. So I thought Natalie was smart in doing that in picking Sandra because it almost guaranteed that she got her fire token for sure.
So in the episode, it looked like it was like a total blindside for Natalie, but Dalton Ross, who was there at that first tribal council, that he wrote up a little bit more about what was going on there. And it seemed like that Natalie was really starting to get clued in that it was going to be her. And that was something that you had to go through in your first couple of days on the Island of the Idols. And I always remember when they were talking about like, well, Elaine is likable, so she'll win if she gets to the end. And you were talking about how like, well, it's day three. Can we put a pin in it? Can we come back to it in about 20 days? So, and Amber, I guess, had to deal with that also. And Kim and a lot of the people that, and Adam, their names were thrown around on those first couple of days. So how do you ride that out without going into total panic mode?
When I watched the episode and I seen Kim, who was like, she was a strong winner, son. She ran her season.
Yeah.
She was so dominant. For her to come into this game and be placed in a situation that I found myself in, like I felt for her. I know that feeling of walking up on conversations and people not wanting to include you because they're debating on whether or not it's going to be you. Like, I know those feelings and I know that feeling of alone. So I felt for her big time. When you go to tribal and you get that feeling that it's going to be you, like your heart just sinks, your stomach just starts turning and man, it's miserable. And I don't wish that upon nobody, bro. Like to know that your dream's getting crushed, like that's so hard to accept. And I just think that like with Kim in particular, like she has an opportunity to switch her game around if she chooses to do so, because she has that savvy about her. So it's all about getting footing and figuring out which is the right person to talk to. Who should you turn to? Like for me, I turned to Big Tom and I turned to Chelsea and Missy. And I just professed my undying devotion to them. You know what I mean? When I went up to Aaron, I was like, I'll do whatever you want. Basically telling him I was a goat for him. And who's not going to pass that up? Mm-hmm. But I think she's smart enough to be able to do those things and wiggle her way back in if she gets her mind right, because it is a mindset. Like, you could get yourself in a position where you're like, woe is me, nothing's going to work out, I'm not, you know what I mean? You can get in that and you shoot yourself in the foot. So I think she's smart enough to pull herself out of something like that.
I felt so terrible for Kim when I watched the episode, and you know, I've gotten to know Kim over the years, and you know, I think that she's like a, you know, in addition to being a really great player, you know, she's a really fun person to be around. I just felt so terrible for her, where it seemed like she's not really doing anything in this game, where it's not like that she had been, you know, like even like, you know, for Adam and Denise, okay, they made a mistake. It's hard to really pinpoint what Kim's mistake was. And everybody was just like, no, well, you're part of this group, and so you have to go. And I was really happy for Kim that she was able to, you know, at least, you know, hold off the executioner for a vote.
Yeah. Well, Rob, you know, as good as anybody, that perception is reality.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody perceives her to be a dangerous player. And then, like, just by Yul throwing those names out of the Poker Alliance and her being one of them, they rationalize why it should be Kim that goes. You know what I mean? Like, it's the smallest thing. Like, me, Tom, and Vince was working and getting bamboo. We were working, and they're like, all right, those three are out. It's like, what? I was working. We wasn't talking, like, crazy strategy or whatever. So, like, they can find the smallest thing to literally flip it on a dime, and that's where she found herself. And like you said, I just felt terrible. But I think she's smart enough to figure out. And the thing is, too, is like, even though we didn't see Kim doing these things and having these conversations, and like, that doesn't mean that she wasn't. You know what I'm saying? Because they didn't show me doing those things, but I was.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see on how it works out for her coming up in the next episode.
Well, you mentioned about how you and Tom and Vince were off, you know, gathering wood or bamboo. And then we saw in the episode that Adam and Denise were, you know, they got caught in a similar situation where they went off to the well and they were talking, but they were also then like, oh, there are 8 people here. So got to vote one of them out. And Adam was able to turn it around. I was really impressed with what Adam and Denise were able to do. I thought Adam was in a lot of trouble coming into this game, and I really was convinced he was going to be the first person voted out as I watched the episode. But as more time has passed since I watched the episode, I'm just more and more impressed with what Adam was able to do, with not only get the target off of him, but then also to get out one of the people that he felt like was a big problematic pair for him in Jeremy and Natalie.
Yeah, I thought Adam done great. But the key to all of that was Ben.
Yeah.
You know, if Ben didn't take that information to him, then who knows how it would have played out and would have sat on that. So the fact that he had formed whatever bond him and Ben had formed in those first few days, and it was strong enough, and he gave Ben the feeling of, you know, like, I'm good with you kind of thing. So it really helped him to be able to flip that. And put it in a different direction. And well, that's kind of like me in my season. Whenever I found out that my name was being thrown out, I went straight to the source. I went straight to the group and to Aaron and them. And I was like, yo, I'll do whatever. And it helped me. If somebody hadn't have told me that, then who knows? I would have probably been first out. So it was really good that he had set himself up with Ben so well that Ben gave him that information. That way he was able to change the thing and switch it up and get who he wanted out. That was a big part of it too.
Yeah. And that was like what we saw Tyson do in this episode, where he went to, you know, Yul and Wendell and Nick and was saying, hey, you know, look, whatever you want, Amber's my friend, I'll vote for her. I'll do whatever you guys want to do. And people, I do think that are, you know, people, players are, you know, for lack of a better word, greedy. And it's like, oh, okay. Ooh, there's another person I could put in my pocket. There's another vote that I could take with me. So they're excited about that idea, and it works. But just to go back to Adam and Ben, that what's interesting there is that, you know, that I think Adam and Ben, you know, have a relationship from before the game, And mm-hmm. what's dangerous about that is that it's a relationship that's not really on anybody's radar. So Adam and Ben are able to have like a little bit of shorthand. They've hung out at different, events together. They, mm-hmm. They're both part of like their recent winners. And so they have like a little bit of a shorthand that's not, and nobody's like, oh, Adam and Ben, that's a pregame relationship we have to worry about.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like me as a rookie coming in, like I got to meet so many people like the finale. I met you. I met Adam Klein. I got to meet Jonathan Penner and Sugar. There was just a ton of old school Survivor players that I had never met. And just from meeting people, like I can tell you like who I clicked with, who I thought was awesome, who I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And if I was to go into a season where, say, there's Jonathan Penner, or there's a Sugar, there's an Adam, there's a you know what I mean? My initial feelings at those meet and greets that I met you guys, I'm going to go with that. So the fact that Adam and Ben have done that, and it's not like a Sandra and Rob relationship, that's huge. That's super beneficial. And I think it would be awesome because I love both of the guys. I think Adam's a great guy, and I think he's super smart, and he's totally capable of winning the damn thing. And I just love Ben. I think Ben's great. I think he got a lot of shit for his season.
Yeah.
But I think he deserved the win. And he's here to prove something. So I think he's playing hard. And I think it's totally, just like you said, it's going to help them so much because it's not like one of those big relationship dynamic duo out in the forefront. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Elaine, you brought up how you ran into Penner at the finale. Can I ask you to tell your story about when you and your girlfriend and your friend Crystal ran into Penner?
Oh my God! Okay, well, when I seen Jonathan Penner, like I've been watching Survivor since Jump. When I seen Jonathan Penner, I knew exactly who he was. And he came up and he introduced himself, and I was like, "Bro, I know who you are." And we got to talking. Well, my friend Crystal, who is my best friend, he got a little tipsy. She was having a fantastic time. She had never been on an airplane before. It was the first time of her being on the West Coast. And so we was going redneck wild, you know? And she got hogtied and hammered, basically. And she was drunker than a monkey. She got drunker than Cootie Brown. And she introduced herself to Jonathan Penner. And she's like, "Hi, I'm Elaine's manager. My name's Crystal." And he told her that his name was Steve.
"My name is Steve."
And she's like, "Steve, nice to meet you, Steve." And from then on, the rest of the night, she would holler across the dance floor at Steve. And it was the funniest shit ever. And he was so great. Jonathan Penner is such a great guy. Yeah. And And fuck ALS is all I gotta say, right?
Well, I was so happy to see him. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. Really, I don't think I had seen, I'd seen him for more than just a minute, you know, in the last couple of years since his wife, Stacy, had been diagnosed with ALS. And I was just so happy to see him and, see him out for a little bit. And I got to have, a great talk with him for a while there. But yeah, that was so funny. I was talking with you guys that night and it's hilarious. I love Crystal.
Yeah, Crystal was drunker than Cootie Brown, man. It was the funny. She was high kicking and everything, bro. I don't know. Like, I took her out there and she just went crazy. But when Jonathan Penner told her that his name was Steve, that was probably my favorite part of the night. And so, like, I was on social media, like, I posted a pic of me and Jonathan. And I was like, it was so nice to meet Steve and hang out with Steve. And people in my comments are like, "Do you not know who that is?" And I was like, "FYI, I know who the fuck this is." Like, you had to be there because he was just so nonchalant. And it was so funny, dude. He's such a great guy. I love talking to him. And, I hate what his wife's going through. And if you can donate, kick in on the fuck ALS fund. That's all I got to say. It's a good cause for sure.
Well, and that's a great way to go back to Yule, who has said that, if he wins the prize money, and he thought it was only $1 million coming into the game, that he was going to donate it to ALS research and was going to ask CBS to match that donation. And so we'll see, if that ends up coming up on the show.
Yule is such a great, I loved Yule coming into this. When he was on his season, I just thought he was so calm, collected. He was so rational and just in general, a good guy. And the fact that he comes out on a season like this and he's like, yo, I'm going to take all this and kick it over to ALS. Like, I thought that was like, I'm like, yes, that reconfirmed everything I thought about Yoel. And so I'm team Yoel. Like, if he made it to the end and won it, like, bro, I would be so happy for him.
Yeah. Such good. Well, Elaine, he's somebody else who I thought had an amazing first night. And, you know, it's really hard for me to find people that I feel like did not play well in this first night. And I think it just speaks to, you know, the level of competition on this season. Yes. That I feel like that so many players did great things in this first episode. I was very surprised that Yoel was somebody who I thought was going to be a little bit on the ropes to start with. People were going to be threatened by how smart mm-hmm. he was. And he came in and I thought he played very aggressively to start off this season and now has himself in a very strong spot on the tribe that he's on.
Yeah. See, the thing about Yoel's gameplay is yes, he was aggressive, but like if you were having the conversations with him, he's talking to you calmly. He's being rational. Like, it doesn't seem aggressive. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. that just goes and goes to show you like how well he plays. And even though he's been removed from the game for what is it, like 14 years or something like that, like he still has his pulse on Survivor, and that amazes me. But that's just, man, I think it's because he's just such a great dude and a good player in general that you could keep him out for 20 more years and he's gonna walk back in and do his damn thing. You know what I mean? So
yeah
Yoel's great.
Yeah, he jumped in and he was the one that was really pushing out this poker alliance. And, you know, he has a really great he like tweeted like an essay out that you can go in and check out. And he's talking about how that he really didn't even know if it was real, but he thought it was something that he could talk about that was going to, you know, throw a target on people. And he was able to, you know, really make that be, you know, something that people were very concerned about in those first couple of days.
See, that's the thing is that, you know, you could have thrown out like, oh, so-and-so. Okay, Reem. Reem moved everybody's clothes. Oh, well, this bitch got to go. You know what I mean? Like, it could be like the simplest thing. So the fact that he had that knowledge of those four individuals playing in that poker tournament and use that to his advantage, that was super smart on him. But it could have, like, any player could have done that. It's just he done it first. You know what I'm saying? So he put the little seed out there. And when you're in those first couple of days, you should know, Rob, like, it's anybody but me. Please don't let it be me. I just want to get in a group or get in. So you're looking for something. And the fact that he throwed it out there, then people get behind it. And yeah. I thought that was super smart. That was a good play on his part. But like you said, every single player is like playing so well. And it's like the first freaking episode. So it's like, man, this is going to be awesome. I'm so excited, you know?
Yeah. Elaine, what can Kim do that she's been sort of like painted in this poker alliance? How does she get out of this now?
Well, I think she started, you know, when you make yourself vulnerable, which is a lot harder to do when you're playing with a bunch of sharks, you know what I mean? But typically when you make yourself vulnerable, you reach people's hearts with your story or with your emotions or whatever. And I think her being that vulnerable in those first few days, I think it may like change people's minds about her a little bit. You know, she can find that one person that she can confide in. And then like Yoel did with the seed of the Poker Alliance, if she can start planting a different seed, I think she would be able to pull herself out. And, you know, now that Amber's gone, because Tyson is such a huge threat, she could also start flipping and pointing towards Tyson's direction, because Tyson has a stronger connection with Rob than Kim does. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So she can actually start pushing things in the way of Tyson, which other people would jump on because it's, then again, it's not them. And to me, Tyson is a bigger threat because he's more connected to Rob and, you know what I'm saying? So I think she has windows and avenues that she can take. It's just which I'm not sure on which one she's going to pick. You know?
Yeah. And to bring Yule back into this, you know, one of the ways I think that Yule is so smart, and we saw at the end of the episode when, you know, Kim didn't get voted out, but the votes were split on Amber and Kim. And then Yule put his hand on Kim's shoulder and basically, I think, had been, you know, trying to cultivate that relationship. Yeah. I think that Yule is looking at Kim as another person that he's trying to bring into the fold.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, that goes back to Terry Dietz and Abby Maria, whenever she's crying,
yeah,
you know, sitting on the beach, and he just, as a human being, went to her and speak to her, and he said they talked about all kinds of things that had nothing to do with Survivor, but from that conversation, she felt a certain way towards him moving forward, and it helped him. And this is the same aspect, is whenever somebody is basically on an island by themselves and they feel ousted, whoever reaches that handout, that throws that lifeline to them. It could form something that others may not be seeing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. If she can find that one lean to whatever, then yeah, Yule could be her dude, and it could open up a whole nother side of the game for him.
Did anybody do that to you?
Yeah, I mean, Big Tom, mm-hmm. in the very beginning, because, you know, I was super paranoid. As soon as I heard my name, I was like, yo, I was freaking out, because you just don't expect it that soon. And when your name, and that's why, like, Sandra, whenever Sandra goes to Nick and was like, Nick, now it's you. And then she goes to Tony and he's like, now it's you, Tony. And she tells them, oh, Tyson and so-and-so are saying this. When you hear your name, you want out the people that are saying your name. Mm-hmm. So whenever I found out that Ronnie was saying mine, I was like, yo, this cat got to go. I'm going to do whatever. You see what I mean? So it's funny to watch it, because that's exactly what happened to me, is somebody said, yo, he's gunning for you. And then I instantly want him out. So when Sandra went and done that, it's so funny to see how it works so well, mm-hmm. because she should be a target bigger than crap in my eyes. And she wasn't even on nobody's radar other than Amber's. And like, by her going to Nick and going to Tony, the focus was completely taken away from her. And that was amazing, dude. She's a genius, bro, for doing stuff like that.
Yeah, it really was impressive to see what Sandra was able to do in that first night. And I think it's so scary. I think that if, you know, I was back on one of these seasons, I would be terrified to say a name. And I think a lot of the players were terrified to say, especially considering how much it got back to people. If you go back to the last big All-Star season they had in Game Changers, Sierra got voted out, that she was the person that she was just throwing out a name, and then it got back to her. So I think it would be very, very terrifying that somebody says, like, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? It'd be like every night that we try to get dinner, my wife and I, of like, well, where do you want to eat?
Yeah, that's the problem, is when you do finally say a name, and you put it out in the universe and you make it real, you don't know who you just told. You don't know if they're going to run back and tell such and such and so and so that you just said that. Mm-hmm. So every time you say a name, it's risky. But if you don't say a name and you wait, your name may be spit out somewhere. So you might want to beat them to the punch, so to speak. Just not be the first, very, very first one.
Elaine, you know? This is what I would do. And if you go back, you can have this. I would say, you ask me what, okay, give me a name. And I'll say, okay, let's, on the count of three, we'll both say it. Okay. And
then, we'll both
one, two, three, say it.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. Yeah. I mean, seriously, like, because that's how it was. It's like, who do you want? When they were trying to decide, when Ben and them were trying to decide, who was it, Adam or Denise? Like, they went around in that circle like four or five times, and they kept flipping it back and forth because nobody wanted to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. No, they were all too scared because they didn't want to be in control and be like, oh, well, Ben let spearhead this, or you know what I mean? And that's part of it, man. It brings back flashbacks of like just the chaos that takes place on the island, that is just absolutely, you can't explain it. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't explain it.
But let me ask you something about that, where it was like, okay, was Adam or Denise? And there was so much like, I don't know. What do you think? I don't care. Just anybody, say a name. Do you think was that more of a symptom that maybe that what that plan wasn't the real plan because nobody was like that sure of what to do? Or do you think that Adam and Denise really were the possibilities at that point and that people were just having a hard time figuring out which one would be the tougher one? Because I mean, I feel like wouldn't it be obvious? Isn't Adam the person who is the bigger threat out of Adam and Denise? I'm not sure why anybody would be even saying it should be Denise.
I don't even know why there was a debate. But Jeremy and Natalie both were in on that conversation.
Yeah.
So I think they for them, it was 100% real. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, that was the plan. I just think they got a little case of I'm not going to make, you know what I mean? I think they got a case that I'm not going to say it and solidify it unless somebody else, they didn't want to be the one spearheading it.
But they were in that conversation. So it makes me wonder, was everybody just sort of like, okay, Jeremy and Natalie, what do you guys want to do? Okay, whatever you guys say, because people maybe already knew it was going to be Natalie and they can't tell Jeremy and Natalie, well, actually, you know, the plan is going to be blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I think the other three people involved in the conversation, I think for them it was, well, I don't want to say because it's not really what I'm doing. I think that was a little case of that as well. It's just hard. It's hard to throw somebody's name out there and for it not to get back to them. So that I'd be a little gun shy too, which I was when I played. I was a little gun shy of saying people's names other than Karishma's. Mm-hmm. I mean, Karishma's name was always on the chopping block. That was an easy go-to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it makes you nervous to throw things out there for them.
Yeah. Well, do you think that we'll see that in this season where one person will just end up being the safe person that it's okay to say their name because it's always going to be somebody who's like the basically, I think that this position has sort of evolved over these last couple of years where I think that I thought Karishma was kind of in a good spot in your season because she was always like the decoy vote, but not ever really the target for the vote until she really ended up sort of like stepping up in the game, whereas for a while she was just an easy person to say it's always going to be Karishma, but then it really never was.
Yeah, well, you know, the very first vote for me, the what swayed, well, in my mind, when I went to Dean and talked to Dean, and I was like, "Yo, Dean, if you have to throw my name out there and tell Ronnie and Aaron that you're voting for me, I'm okay with that." And he's really, he's like, "You don't care," and I was like, "No, dude. As long as you're telling me you're not doing it, I'm good." And so I used it. I used it as like, all right, I'll be the backup or I'll be the, you know what I mean? I try to use that in different occasions. So yeah, I think it's a legitimate position to be in and it's not such a bad position, even though, you know, people can play idols, things can happen and you don't ever want your name written down, but you could be in worse spots. You could be the one going home. You know what I'm saying?
So. Mm-hmm. Elaine, we're talking about all these players that did so well in the first episode. And we talked about Tony for a second, but I also think that Sarah was somebody who also got off to a really great start in this game. That Dalton Ross asked so many players, who are you going to vote for first? Sarah. She came in, she dominated in that challenge, and there wasn't a whisper of, hey, let's vote out Sarah. And she was like back like it was Game Changers, and she was, really working everybody. I was so impressed with Sarah in the first episode too.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that more people didn't throw her name out there. Like you said, because the pregame stuff, it was like, who are you voting out first? It's like, she's got to go, you know? So when she wasn't even on the radar, and then the fact that her and Tony played together, you know what I mean? Like, played together twice, didn't they?
They both played together. I mean, Tony was only there in Game Changers for like a second, but they were both on the same season.
That's true.
Yeah.
Was it like 6 days or something?
They were never even on the same tribe. But, you know, in terms of like getting ready, like the, you know, they've talked about how like they both knew they were going out there and they would like, you know, have like phone calls and stuff before the game.
Yeah. So why wasn't anybody looking at that dynamic duo? You know what I mean? That makes me wonder like what's going on.
Yeah.
How do they divert that kind of target? Because, you know, they, Jeremy and Natalie, they were target because they were a duo, and Rob and Amber duo, the Poker Alliance. Like, you figure that somebody would be throwing Sandra and Tony's names out there because of the two of them playing together. But maybe because their relationship was a little more tumultuous than the others,
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's why it wasn't such a big target. But no, I think Sarah, I think she done great. I think she's a badass.
And Tony called that out on the mat where they said, okay, Tony, what do you think of your tribe? He's like, well, I'm here with Sarah, I'm here with Sandra, who voted me out. And that was wonderful because,
Hey, I have to say though, your Tony impersonation is way better than your Rob.
I know you're so mean about my Boston Rob impression that I feel like that was one of my go-tos.
When it was on the red carpet, I was so waiting for you to like bust out your Boston Rob accent. To Boston Rob, but you didn't. You didn't do that.
It's hard to do it to the person. You know, I just feel like the Boston Rob is going to give me a noogie if I try to do the impression right of him to his face.
Yeah, well, you're like the smaller version of Boston Rob. So, like, you know, your Tony impression is like really good. That was hilarious. Right?
You sound a lot like him. I'm so happy that Tony is back. He's so much fun. I mean, I would like it a little bit better if he wasn't trying to get Tyson voted out. But I always love to see Tony on my TV. Just even when they gave him like the buffs, and then he was we're on the red tribe, Jeff, because we're on fire. We're red hot.
Yeah.
So funny.
No, I love his energy. Like that dude, I need some of that. Like he needs to bottle up whatever it is that he's taking it and sell that shit, because that dude's on fire all the time. Yeah. But yes, Tony is great TV. I think he's an all right guy. We're seeing more of people's personalities, like Tyson, for example. You know, if you watch past seasons, he comes off as super arrogant and cocky, and it, not that he's not those things, because he is. But you know, in that one confessional where he's talking about his kids, and he—I don't know if he actually cried, but he did get teary-eyed and stuff. So you see another side of his personality that necessarily we haven't seen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for me, just Tony being Tony is like, and it's TV gold, bro. I just don't know how you could flip it to make it any better than what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Elaine, it's also Tony fighting being Tony. Like,
that's part
it's
of it.
Killing
exactly.
him to not go full Tony.
Yeah, and you know, I'm all down for a good wrestling match. You know what I mean? So Tony wrestling Tony is like, that's perfect. That's perfect.
In his brain, it's the two Tonys.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, well, speaking of wrestling, I have a question for you. Rick Devins writes to say, which of the winners would you be most intimidated to wrestle?
Let's see. Did you see Kim pull that hair in that challenge? I mean, because she fights dirty now. I don't know.
She's tall also. She has a big reach advantage.
Yeah, but tall don't matter when you're wrestling, because all you got to do is get your hooks on them. You know what I'm saying? So you clip her at the knee and she's down to my size. So I was just saying she was a little vicious, but no, it'd probably be somebody like Tony or Boston Rob.
You're not even just considering the women. You're going to wrestle the men also?
No. Well, I was gonna throw Denise and Sarah in there, because Denise has got some guns and Sarah's just a badass.
Well, yeah, Sarah, I mean, I think Sarah used to do like MMA fighting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so no, I'm not trying to fight her. You crazy? Give me Sandra, which Tommy, I see Tommy Sheen. Yeah, commented that.
Yeah.
Big Red commented that Sandra would whoop my ass, but we're both busted cans of biscuits, so I got a better shot, is what I'm saying. Not that she couldn't beat me. You know? I need a fair match. You know what I'm saying?
Sandra would fight dirty, though.
Well, that's true. She probably would. She's one of those wrestlers that would like put salt in her drawers and throw it in your eyes. You know what I mean? To blind you. That's Sandra's gameplay.
Yeah. Well, she did on Heroes versus Villains. They started with a challenge like that. And she was the one that
Sugar's bra.
Sugar's top. Yeah.
Yes. I forgot about that. She did do that. This is true. Maybe I need to rethink my answer. Dude, seriously, I think every one of them that's on season 40 are beast. You know what I mean? And I think they're all badasses in their own right. And so for me to step in the ring with any of them would be an honor, but I'd love to whoop all they asses. Give me a shot, Jeff. Put me on there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Okay. Let me bring in a question from one of our voicemail callers. And this is a question from Josh on the voicemail that he wants to, as a fellow Kentuckian, he has a question for you.
Okay. What's up, Rob and Elaine? My name is Josh, and I'm a fellow Kentuckian along with Elaine. So, hey, howdy, hello. I was just calling because I know that Elaine is a Southerner. You know, she's got that Southern hospitality. She has publicly, you know, offered to let Sia sleep on her couch if she ever needs a place to lay her head in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, you know? So I was just wondering, Elaine, out of all the winners on season 40, and maybe even outside of season 40, who would you be most likely to let sleep on your couch if they ever need a place to stay?
Okay. Elaine, first, he says, as a fellow Kentuckian, I would say, hey, howdy, hello. Is that an official Kentucky greeting?
You know, I actually know him. That's I went to casting in Bowling Green, and the guy was standing behind me in line, Josh, that just spoke on there.
Yeah.
And we became friends and started talking. And when I made the show, he reached out to me and he's like, yo, I remember you from Bowling Green, being in line with you. And, you know, he's like, I can't believe it. I'm so excited. Da, 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 da. I was like, yo, you should come to one of my watch parties. So he came over to Corbin. He lives out towards Louisville way and stuff. And he came over to Corbin. And he come to a watch party, and me and him became friends. Well, the next watch party, I was like, yo, you should come back. And he's like, I don't know if I can. You know, I got to do this, that. And I was like, yo, you can sleep on my couch. And he's like, you don't know me. I was like, I don't care. You want to come or not? You know, you want to come? So he literally came and crashed on my couch, went to the viewing party, crashed on my couch the next day. And so I think it's funny that he's trying to put the spin on it and ask me what Survivor players, because I literally would open my doors to anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody that had a place to crash, I would
allow. Elaine, first off, that I feel like that I want to just tell you, I don't know if that's a great idea to, you know, let the fans come and sleep on your couch. Like, I feel like you need to know them for a while.
You know, like, I've always went with my gut in life and in general. And you know, when I met Josh, he's a really good guy. And it's not like I got crazy vibes. It was like, man, he's a good dude. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, bro, if you want to come hang out and crash on the couch, then come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I'm just that kind of person, man. I treat people how I want to be treated. And maybe I mean, I could have got murdered in the middle of the night and ended up on Snapped or something.
Snapped is a show.
Yeah, it's like people killing people. I don't know. It's like Homicide First 48 or something. So, yeah, I mean, that's just who I am, man. I try to be kind to others. And he needed he wanted to come, but didn't have a place to stay. And I was like, yo, just it's like a 3-hour drive. Just come hang out with me. Mm-hmm.
And then you said Sia could sleep on your couch?
Yeah, well, you know, Sia gave me $100,000. Yeah. And I didn't personally get to hug Sia's neck. And, you know, I've posted on social media, like, my gratitude and whatever, but I've never actually got to speak to Sia. And so I was saying on I think when I done Nerdtainment, I was like, yo, I'm so thankful and grateful. And I said, Sia, if you're listening, if you ever come to the KY and you need a place to stay, you need a place to crash, my couch is always here. I rock a trailer, but you're more than welcome to come on in. Mm-hmm. And so I told Sia anytime, dude, she could pull up my house anytime. She's always got a place to stay here in Kentucky. So.
Okay, that's very nice. And now Josh wants to know that who from season 4? We know Nick Wilson could stay at your house. Is there anybody else?
My boy Ben. I would love to hang out with Ben and drink a beer. Let's see. Sandra is awesome. I love Sandra. She could always, any of them could come to my house, man. I would open my doors to anybody. But I would like to hang out with Ben and drink a beer. I think Wendell's super cool. Tony would be off the chain. I would love to drink a beer with Tony.
Tony doesn't sleep. That's you could have him sleep at your house, and he doesn't go to sleep.
When I was on 39, I never slept either. I would sleep an hour or two a night. I just couldn't sleep. Like the bamboo hurt my back, the sand hurt my back, and I would be up on and off all night long. So me and Tony could sit by the fire out here in the front yard, burn us a couch and drink us a beer and party all night. You know what I'm saying? So, dude, I'd be down to let any of them come hang out in Kentucky. I think it'd be awesome.
Okay.
Rob, so that extends to you. If you ever want to come to Kentucky, you ever want to come to Kentucky and do some redneck shit, you just holler at me.
What kind of stuff would we do, Elaine?
Well, Aaron's coming. Aaron Meredith's coming to my wedding in September, and he's dead set on going noodling.
So, noodling? I mean,
you ever heard of it?
That's where you load up on pasta?
Oh, shit. No, it's where you go. You stick your arm in the side of riverbanks, and you pull out humongous catfish. They're like anywhere from 30 to 50 pounds catfish, and you let them bite your arm and you jerk them out and wrestle them with your arm.
I'm not even joking. Why do people do that?
I don't know. Listen, I was telling Aaron and them, I was like, yo, city folk love to do country shit and they like to do stupid stuff. So they'll hit these rednecks up to take them noodling, and they literally go in these riverbanks, shove their arms in the sides of these riverbanks and pull out massive catfish. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a real thing, I promise. So if you ever want to come down, I got three ponds.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can noodle in the pond, but I'm sure I got some redneck shit you can do around here, Rob. Promise.
Okay. I have so many more questions for you, Elaine. First off, so tell me about when you had like all of your people from Island of the Idols. Everybody came to your house this summer?
Yeah. Well, when we were on the island, me and Dean used to sit and talk. A lot. And Dean's a strange guy, but he's awesome.
Yeah, I agree with both things.
Yeah. You know, I had never really met anybody like Dean before. And so me and him would have some really good talks and really good conversations. And he was saying that his brother Kurt was a big redneck at heart. He would love to come to Kentucky. And I was like, yo, you should come down and hang out on the farm. And he's like, oh, yeah, that'd be amazing. Let's do that this summer. And I was like, yo, that's all right, cool, down. And then Tommy's like, yo, I want to come. Because, you know, Tommy can't be left out of nothing, Mr. Attention Whore. He's like, yo, I want to come. You can't go without me. And I'm like, all right, Tommy, you can come. Well, then Lauren overheard. And Lauren's like, you're not going anywhere without me. I'm going too, you know. So kind of morphed into this thing where all these people ended up coming. And we hung out for the weekend. We played beer pong. We rode razors and motorcycles. And went out on the lake and went, you know, water skiing and stuff. And I let them jump off the rocks and stuff. You know, we just done all kinds of redneck stuff. And Lauren and Chelsea flew in a couple days early and they actually helped me prepare and surprise my girlfriend. And then when the whole cast got here, well, seven of them that came, they kind of helped me divert attention and they helped me surprise my fiance. And I proposed to her. So, wow. Yeah, I mean, it was,
what did you do?
We have a barn. I have two barns. I live on my grandpa's 100-acre farm and, he's been passed for 10, 12 years now, but it used to be a horse farm. And my girlfriend she's always wanted a horse and, she's been riding me and telling me to get her a horse for years now. And there, I just always, I'm not ready for a horse. That's a huge commitment. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yo, I don't want to get one because I'm going to have to take care of it. I got all these dogs. And so I made her think that she was getting a horse. She really thought she was getting a horse. So I took her in the razor up to the barn that me and Lauren had been and Chelsea had decorated. And Tommy and Dean and Kelly and all of them were already at the barn and my godmother and everybody. And I brought her up there blindfolded. And the kids, they walk through the barn. The kids walk with her through the barn. And I surprised her. And when she showed up at the barn, she thought she was getting a horse. So it was like, it was super cool. I was extra romantical. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it was cool just to have the guys here and be a part of that. And everybody's coming to the wedding. It's September 25th of this year. And everybody's pretty much locked in. There's two or three that I still have to confirm for the head count, but yeah, it's a hell of a party, that's for sure.
Was it bittersweet that she wasn't getting the horse? Was she upset when it was just a proposal and not a horse?
No, well, she's been telling me for years, you know, what she's been wanting to get married for a while. Yeah. And you know, I'm like, I don't know about all that, you know. But it was exactly what she wanted, even though she did want a horse. And then, you know, for our anniversary the other day, I went and I got her a car and I surprised her with a car.
Whoa.
And I had made a video because our anniversary is on the 13th. So we don't really celebrate Valentine's. We celebrate our anniversary. Yeah, I don't want to be double dipping and buying two different things.
Yeah, beat the crowds.
Yeah, yeah. So everybody thought I was getting her a horse. So it was super funny that people thought that the horse is what the present was going to be. And I bought her the next best thing. You know, it's better to get around on. I bought her a car. So.
Okay. And you have anything you could tell us about the wedding?
We were going to get married here on the farm, but it's just so much work. And in order to do what we was wanting to do, it would be like a big ordeal. So we're actually getting married downtown in a venue downtown. And, we're going to hang out with the Survivor cast for a few days and then we're going to go on a honeymoon. But no, man, other than it's going to be an awesome time. I'm super excited. And yeah, it's going to be so much fun to have all my Survivor people back hanging out in Kentucky again.
Now, Elaine, does your fiance mind all of the survivors at the wedding? Because of that, I just from my perspective of that, hey, if I was going to get married to, like, my wife tolerates Survivor stuff, but if I really started to make, you know, my wedding or anything about us into Survivor stuff, she would be annoyed.
Oh, you would be divorced is what you're saying.
A long time ago.
Here's the thing. It's like, you know, when we go on this show, when we come from our seasons, we have these bonds that are unlike any other bonds that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went to the family visit, she has these bonds with these people, just like I do, only it's their family members.
Yeah.
Well, she's super close to Drew. She's super close to Nora's sister, Lala. Like, she has Danny, Elizabeth's brother. Like, she's just super close to all the family members. So it's like, you know, I'm cool with Nora. I love Nora. I think Nora's fantastic. So if I invite Nora and then Tanya invites her, you see what I mean? Like,
I get that. That makes sense.
It just works out because we have these crazy connections. And, you know, honestly, Tanya doesn't have a whole lot of family and I don't necessarily like all my family. So, you know, so I don't know. I just thought, man, let's just have a great time. And listen, when you're hanging out with, I'm going to regret saying this, but when you're hanging out with Tommy and because, you know, he gets the big head when you pay him a compliment. It's like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're hanging out with Tommy and Dean and Lauren and Chelsea and Kelly and Jack and all these people, they're amazing.
Yeah.
And we have so much fun together. So I thought, what better way to celebrate something that's going to be amazing for me with people I care about. So I just think it's going to be one hell of a redneck party, bro. It's just going to be so much fun. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I don't know if you've seen me and Tommy Sheehan dancing.
I did see that. That was very impressive. And I can tell you that I get to hang out with Lauren and Chelsea and DK Chillin the other night. We had a lot of fun at the premiere party. But my wife said, oh, I was talking with Dean for a while, but she said that he kept calling me Amber the whole night.
Oh, my God.
And he doesn't think that it's Amber from Survivor. He's just that's DK Chillin joking of that Rob's wife is Amber.
Yeah, well, Dean, like I said, Dean's a special guy, and his sense of humor may not be everybody's cup of tea. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love Dean. And like you said, like Lauren and Chelsea, and they're all just amazing people, man. And I have so much fun when I'm around them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm 15 years older than some of them, but I feel like a big kid with them. So it's like, I can't wait. There's a bunch of us actually going to the Woodlock thing in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah. What are you guys doing there? In the Poconos, right?
Yeah, in the Poconos, which I thought they were kidding when they first told me.
What is that? Is that for fans or that's just you guys are going there?
It's a spa. Okay, so Tommy has been going to this resort, and it kind of reminded me of the movie Dirty Dancing. Like, mm-hmm. You go to the resort, you play games, and you do this, that, and the other.
And Jason told Nora, no dancing, like Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. Yeah, so Tommy's been going to this resort since he was a kid, And, you know, to generate business and this, that, and the other, they thought they would do a Survivor theme kind of weekend to pull more guests in and this, that, and the other. So we're all going to go. We're all going to play games and just drink and have a good time, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. And like I said, when we get together, it's always a good time. The group of us, it's always a good time.
Okay.
And basically almost, there's a couple people from the cast, but almost the whole cast is coming.
Yeah. You guys are nuts. Bill on Twitter says, besides cumin, what other things do you think are city S word?
Oh, man, city shit. Yeah. Any kind, listen, if it's not pepper or salt, I'm typically not going to use it. You know, I opened the cabinet the other day and there's some shit in there I ain't never heard of. Yeah. Like,
I like to call that Stephen Fishback stuff.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what you cook. Like, what? I don't understand. Like what it goes on.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know either.
What do you put that? I have no idea. But yeah, I still don't know. I still don't know what cumin goes on. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, somebody tell me because I don't know. Somebody
I don't know either. I don't really I don't know anything about it. Stephen K wants to know what were the survivors more excited for, Applebee's or $2 million?
For a lot of people on our season, it was Applebee's, but man, I would have been pumped for the $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
But that's hilarious. Like, I think the over enthusiasm was off the chain when it came to the Applebee's.
Was that for real though? Were people really that excited about Applebee's, or that people were just like hyping it up to be on TV?
No, I mean, we didn't know that they were gonna do all the extra whatever. People didn't know that. Me personally, I wasn't as hyped as all the other people.
Yeah,
like I think I clapped and I was like, oh yes, because I'm a big girl and I need to eat, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But like I think Missy and them was just like over the top, but I just think they do everything extra, so it's like you know what I mean, it was just everything. Yeah. Was extra that
way. Elaine, what restaurant would make you have that reaction?
Well, we don't eat out a lot, but I like Texas Roadhouse pretty good.
Okay. The Texas Roadhouse with the peanuts on the floor.
Yeah. Well, anytime you can go somewhere and throw something on the floor, I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah.
Oh, but the Bloomin' Onion's off the chain, dude. It's so good.
Yeah, but that's they have Bloomin' Onion too at Texas Roadhouse, or that's Outback?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
They ripped it off?
They have one.
Okay.
Well, Outback's good too. Now that place is really, that's my girlfriend's favorite. She loves Outback.
Yeah. Sandra used to like it, but not anymore.
She's probably ate too much. of it.
Okay. This is a question that I got from a lot of our listeners that they wanted to know the answer to this. This is from Felipe.
Hello, Rob and Elaine. I am Felipe, and I just wanted to ask, Elaine, what were you saying in the first episode of Island of the Idols? You were talking about something in a world and it was bleeped out and the world wants to know. Have a great night. Bye.
Elaine, we waited a really long time to be able to ask you this question. This is from last season's premiere. You were talking about underwear and Commando and you said this on the episode.
I'll be in the free world.
And we didn't know what you were talking about, and it was bleeped out, and we had a lot of people write in with guesses.
Yeah, well, you know, what I was talking about was I didn't have any drawers on because I was trying to dry my drawers out. You don't want to be walking around with wet drawers all the time.
No.
And so I was saying, hey, don't let me forget to run off, go to this challenge and run off and leave my drawers, because that would be horrible. And what I said was, is if I do, I'm going to be free lipping in the free world.
nobody submitted that.
Well, that's a country thing, man. Like, you know how guys say free ball, and it's like, shit, I'm a woman, so I'm free lipping. Yeah, when I said that, dude, the camera guys lost it. Like, they lost their shit. And I was like, yo, some of this stuff I say, like, people's never heard before. And so it was, so that made it even more funny to me, you know what I mean? And they were like, yo, you're crazy. I was like, well, it's true. I am. I'm free lipping. So, yeah. So nobody guessed that one, huh?
Nobody guessed that. It might be too late to get a wand off in for it.
Oh, yeah, it might be. Might be. But that would have been a good one, right? Well, what else would you call it?
There was a lot of guesses that people thought you said free ballin'.
Yeah, free, but I'm a girl, so how come I couldn't say free?
I don't know.
I couldn't say free ballin'. So I made my own shit up. I was free living.
Is that now an Elaine original, or that's actually a phrase?
Well, I think it's a phrase.
It is now.
If it wasn't Elaine original, I'm just going to go ahead and get the copyrights to it and put it out there. So I have some t-shirts made.
When you went into casting, and I know you talked a little bit about your casting story when Josh Wigler talked to you on First One Out, but did you know immediately that they were going to take you, or did they feel like it really went on and you weren't sure if you were getting on the show?
You know, and this, I hate telling this story because I always feel like it sounds conceited and I try not to be like that. But, you know, 20 years ago when I applied when I was in college, I always said that if I could ever get a person, an actual human being to speak to me, because, you know, you send your video in and you try to get the eye of casting like Penny and Caitlin. And I always said if I could ever get them just to talk to me, that there's no way that they would pass this up. I'm full of like one liners. I'm full, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think I'm great. So I thought, yeah, if I ever get them to speak to me. So when I got the call, back in, I think it was October when I first got the call, I just, there's something about it. I just knew, you know what I mean? Like I just knew that once I got to the next step, that it was just going to be, I was a shoo-in, basically. Not because I'm so fantastic and great of a person or this or the other. I just think I'm super interesting. I'm super funny. I have a good personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes for good TV. So why wouldn't you want that?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's conceited at all. I think that you are a super interesting character to have on the show. And I think that what you also combine with that is that I think that you also are keenly aware that you are probably underestimated by the other players. And I think that also makes you, you know, a really great player at the game as well. You know, they could put, you know, anybody out there that's just going to be a goofball, but that you sort of like are able to have that. But then also, you know, you also are very aware of your strengths and weaknesses at the game. And I think that that's what made you a really great player, Elaine.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, Jeff said, he said, you know, your situation was kind of like you were in the game, but you're out of the game. And I was like, well, that's kind of how I am, Jeff. You know, mm-hmm. like I would be a part of conversation sometimes. And then other times I would go off by myself and make shit in the woods, you know?
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so...
Were you also aware of, so you had such a great rapport with Jeff, and I think that you can tell like who Jeff's favorites are when you're out there, and you know, like with Christian a couple seasons ago, there's just like players that Jeff really loves to mix it up with. Were you at all concerned with like, okay, oh, Jeff is asking me a lot of questions, like I don't want, you know, that to make other people feel like that, oh, Jeff likes me the best, or I'm getting like all this TV time, and then people get jealous, and then that's the reason they want to go after you?
Well, Tom Laidlaw for my season was never going to let any of it go, because every day at camp it was like, oh, Jeff, I love you, Jeff. Oh, like he would make fun of me and be like, oh, I'm so, like, pretend like to be me and be like, oh, I'm in love with Jeff. And I'm like, dude, like, so I started doing it back. I was like, I love me some Jeff, you know what I mean? Like, he's so cute, he's so handsome. So me and Tom would like bust each other's chops back forth, you know what I mean? So it, even if I had thought that, Big Tom was never gonna allow anybody else to get it, you know, because he was always, oh, he, Jeff is so in love with Lane kind of thing. It was like he never shut up about it in camp. Like when I went to tribal and like we come back, I was crying or whatever, he's like, I see what you done. Yeah, oh, Jeff, I'm crying. Oh, Jeff. And he's like, so he was giving me shit constantly about that. But no, I wasn't too worried about it, because when Jeff talked to me, I would be like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, Jeff. I got no idea what's going on. Because I was always afraid of giving him too much information. So by doing that, I think, like, you know, he would go to, like, Lauren a lot. mm-hmm. and ask Lauren questions, because Lauren would give super emotional reactions and whatever, where I just kept playing the dumb redneck cards.
Mm-hmm. Elaine, this is so much fun getting to talk with you today. Do you have anything else that you want to, you know, get off your chest about season 40 or anything else you want to talk about while, you know, we have you here today?
No, I mean, I'm rooting for my boy Nick, of course. But I just, congratulations, everybody that's on, you know what I mean? Hmm. Like, and I know people talk a lot of trash about who deserves what. And like I said earlier, my honest opinion is if you were given the W by the peers that you were with at the time, you deserve it. So, you know, everybody deserves to be in their spot on 40. And, you know, there's a lot of trash talk about Tina should have been there, Richard Hatch and things like that. And I don't disagree that maybe, you know, like they could have been a part of the season. Like I honestly think that they should have had like 25 winners. You know what I mean? Like, but the people that have those slots, I don't necessarily think they're horrible winners. I think they deserve to be there. And I'm super excited for the season. I can't wait to watch. If you guys are around in Kentucky, you come to some watch parties with me and Nick. It's going to be a good time. And follow me on Instagram at lace.32. That's all I got.
How would Big Red have done if he's on this season? Do you think that they would have chewed him up and spit him out, or he would be in a really good spot?
Listen, he would have been spit out because he didn't have his girl Lauren telling him what to do. Oh, take that. I mean, take it.
I think that he would have actually been okay. I mean, I think that maybe people would have been like, we don't know this guy. Who is he? But I think that he would have like been able to be very underestimated in terms of that. I just don't think that anybody was going to worry about him, and because there were such bigger threats around.
No, and see, I think that's where my boy's falling into right now. My boy Nick is they're not viewing him because there's so many other big threats. So I think I don't want to knock Tommy. I love Tommy. I think Tommy's great. I just like to bust his chops. Mm-hmm. But I think he probably would have been doing okay because of that. The threat level on other people would have been a lot bigger. And I think he could have fell into that Nick Wendell, the new school alliance that seems to be forming. With those people, who was the other two that was in that?
Sophie and Yule.
Yeah, Sophie and Yule. Like, so it's like new school, old school, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think he could have fell into that and done pretty well.
Okay, Elaine, well, I really appreciate you making time for us. I know you had a late night last night, and so I really appreciate you spending time talking to me on a Sunday.
Dude, it seems like every time I've talked, you know what it is? Every time I talk to you, I'm drinking the night before because I'm so intimidated by speaking with you.
No, stop it.
I've decided that I've come to the conclusion. That's because
we'll
the
go
last
with
time
that.
I think the last time I talked to you, I was hungover too, I think.
Yeah. Well, on the exit time. Interview, definitely. You were said that you just got home at like 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah, so it seems like every time me and you have a convo, it's when I'm hungover. So, man, we're going to have to do something different or drink a few together so we're both on the same level.
Okay, well, we'll have a sleepover when I'll come out to Kentucky
yeah,
and crash
see,
at your
you
house.
Can come to Kentucky, crash on. Dude, my couch is so comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you can crash on the couch. We can do some redneck shit. We can burn our. I got a couch in the front yard I got to burn. So we can burn my couch.
What do you mean we're going to burn a couch?
Well, like I burn stuff instead of like the I'll take garbage off or whatever. But like if I got wood or you know stuff like that, take the springs out of the couch, then you can just burn it because it's all wood material. So yeah, we can burn a couch and you know it's stuff, bro. You can do red things around here.
I think I would like that. I think I would like burning a couch.
Yeah, that'd be super fun, man. It would be fun. It'd be a whole nother experience for sure. Cause have you ever been to Kentucky?
No, I have not. Oh, actually, I'm trying to think that, I'm trying to remember. I went to like a bunch of like charity events there. I'm not sure. Reality for Diabetes, is that in Kentucky?
Oh, I think that's across the line in Cincinnati.
Okay. So you know, maybe not Elaine, but
put it on my bucket list. I'm in the real royal part of Kentucky, you know, it's not like when you go to Lexington, you see those beautiful horse farms and this, that, and the other. And there's beautiful places here, but it's not like you just have to come, bro. I can't explain it. You just have to go.
What do you mean you're in the royal part of Kentucky?
Well, because, you know, like Lexington to me is like a big city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to other people, like, they're like, oh, this is country. I'm like, hell no, this ain't country. I'll show you country. Come to my house. I'll show you country.
All right.
It's just different. I don't know. You'd have to be here or be from here to know what I mean.
All right. Let's do it. Let's do it, Elaine. Bring my kids or it's going to be, we're going to have too crazy of a time.
Well, I mean, I'm kid friendly. I take the youngins out on the lake and put them on inner tube and throw them around, let them jump off the rock. I mean, yeah. We can do that too. So you just got to decide on what you want to do. You want to do a family weekend? I can show you that. Or do you want to do like a redneck, drink some beer, and get shit faced? You know, you decide. Let me know on what you
choose.
Want.
Your own adventure. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Elaine, was that Tanya's son who was at the finale that told Jeff Probst that he was going to take his job?
Yeah, that's her youngest boy, Hunter. The one that I said's my best friend.
Yes.
Yeah, that's her youngest. Her oldest boy, Trevor, was there too. But Hunter, he was so dead set on talking to Jeff that he just couldn't. He couldn't help it. I was like, yo, you told Jeff you wanted this job. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It was Hunter, but it was super funny. And the interaction between me and Jeff after that was hilarious. Yeah, I can't remember what it was he said to me, but when I told him I got nothing for you, dude, that was the funniest shit ever.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that because I was there and like in between the commercial break, there was a really funny moment back and forth with you and Jeff.
Yeah, I can't remember what he said. He was saying something, and he had been talking to me, so he was saying something, and I was just like, I got nothing, because he says that to us all the time. Got nothing for you. Head back to camp. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, got nothing for you, Jeff.
I think it was Elena that when he was like talking about like they were going to get ready to show the season 40 clip, and he was like, oh, well, this was like a really fun group where I really enjoyed like hanging out with these guys.
Yeah, well, then he got me back because then he's like, oh, I'm glad to see you dressed up for the reunion. I was like, what? I went shopping for this. I was dressed up. It was freaking hilarious. Like I said, I love Jeff because he's super witty. He's funny. And like I tell everybody, man, he's just a dude. And yeah, when he said in the pregame stuff that you just want to hang out with Elaine and drink a beer, I felt the same about Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff. You holler at a biscuit. We'll go get some beers. Maybe I'll have Jeff Probst out here burning couches in the front, y'all. Yeah. You never know.
All right. Well, we'll have a whole tribal council of burning couches.
Exactly.
All right, Elaine. Thank you. It's so much fun. Take care, okay?
I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Elaine Stott on the podcast. I had a lot of fun with Elaine on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed hearing from her, too. So pumped up. Season 40. This is so great. All weekend, I've been looking forward to having the chance to talk about this, and I'll be able to talk about it even more with Jessica Leese on This Week in Survivor, when we'll take on the Jordan Kalish quiz is on the way, and then it is the return of the Wand Off coming up in the Wiggle Room on Monday. So still a lot to do here on the podcast this weekend. Of course, if you want to help support everything we have going on Rob Has a Podcast, all of the shows that we have coming your way, the best way to do that is at robhasawebsite.com/patron, of course, that we have everything going on with our patron podcast feed, our patron community, and of course, our Survivor pregame show coming up on Wednesday night for patrons only. All that and more at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you again for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.